Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the West Ham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and I'm joined by James Jones and Will Pugh of West Ham World. Gents, how are we?
Very well, Johnny. How are you?
Yeah, I'm surviving. It was not the result that was desired, shall we say, on Monday. Chelsea could have been something. West Ham are a side who like to turn up against other London clubs. But in the end, the man who really made his presence felt was Eden Hazard.
I think that's the big thing to remember. As much as the performance was another quite mediocre one, I think, with other than some promising spells in the second half, certainly the first half was nothing to be proud of. But the difference was, once again, a man who's going to be playing for Real Madrid next season. So
he says with confidence. Yeah. Do you think that is the case?
People I've spoke to, it sort of sounds like that's it's as good as a done deal. And I think you can tell from his demeanour as well, can't you? There was obviously all the West Ham fans were singing, "He's off to Madrid, he's off to Madrid," when he scored the two goals. And he was asked about it in his interview after the game, and again he didn't quash it, and he did his usual thing of glossing over it. And
I'm focused on Chelsea. Eden Hazard, actually, he's a proper flirt. He was a flirt as a teenager when he was playing for Lille, and he said, all of the top European clubs I'd love to play for, before announcing 3 months later that he'd chosen Chelsea, bizarrely. And he's been at it ever since. Just say you're going to Real Madrid, Eden.
I mean, I wish his demeanour was that he doesn't really want to play for Chelsea anymore, because that means that he wouldn't have done what he did to us on Monday night. But yeah, I mean, there's not much you can do when a player does that sort of thing against you. I stood up and applauded that first goal.
I mean, it was absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a lot you can do. I mean, my only gripe with it for the whole night, really, because I thought, you know, it wasn't a bad performance. The first half was a little bit ropey, but second half we were a lot better after Pellegrini changed it. My only gripe was, you know you've got a player of that quality in the Chelsea team. So why are you allowing him, particularly for the first goal, I suppose for the second as well, but by then we were knackered.
Space to pick up the ball in midfield.
Like, he's drifted into the centre of the pitch. He's then come deep to collect the ball, and he's had enough time to turn, 40 yards away from goal, and then run at pace. And we'd already noticed it when Ogbonna got booked for taking him down earlier on in the half, that, you know, if he's running at pace towards goal, you're not going to stop him. The only way you're going to stop him is if you foul him and get a yellow card. And you know, by then, he'd already knew what he was going to do, and he saw the gaps and he went for it. I mean, it was a world-class goal. But if you give a player that sort of space in the middle of the pitch, you know, you're asking for trouble.
Is there an element of a fear factor there, where the West Ham fans and indeed West Ham players are looking at him and going, "Oh, if it's Eden Hazard, if I try and get close, I'm going to get turned. He's going to make me look silly." Do you think this is cowardice from the players?
Yeah, I think cowardice is strong, to be honest. But
it is... We don't pull any punches, well. Cowardice.
We're just watching it on the TV now. It's on the TV.
Yeah, look at them. Oh, terrified. They're weeping. Terrible.
The most frustrating bit, I think, about that is him driving straight through the heart of the defence. I think I do agree that, you know, he can make you look silly if you lunge in on him. And he is one of those players where getting tight on him doesn't help, and neither does if you stand off and give him space. So you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. But the fact that he literally just drove straight through the middle. I mean, a lot of his goals that you see, he comes in from wide positions, doesn't he? So he draws players out, then knocks it past them, and then inevitably, a bit like Iron Robin used to do, bend it into the far corner or smash it into the near post. But it was just frustrating how he did pick up the ball, and he bypassed the midfield, which he can do, but then it was just drove straight through two centre-halves in quite a congested area and just dinked it in.
The thing that I found quite concerning from a West Ham perspective was that, okay, it's Hazard, but this wasn't the first kind of goal of that type that you've conceded this season. I was reminded immediately of Callum Wilson for Bournemouth earlier in the season, where he picks the ball up in midfield and drives again through the middle of the defence with Mark Noble sort of running after him, doing his best, but looking like he's got a piano on his back. And again, then there was this reluctance to defend, a reluctance, even if it is, James, as you say, a case of just clattering him, taking the yellow card. Do West Ham have a problem when a skillful player starts driving at the defence at pace?
I think that there is an element to that. I mean, you know, as I mentioned before, Ogbonna had to take one for the team and take a yellow card because he was nowhere near as quick as Hazard early on in the half. Balbuena's not the quickest. So I suppose there is a little bit of fear because, you know, at the end of the day, we haven't the most... I mean, Balbuena is impressive, but, you know, in terms of... You know, they're not the smartest of defenders in terms of that respect. You think Ogbonna might be a little bit, but he has lost a bit of pace over the years because, you know, he's played for Juventus, he's played up, you know, in the Champions League, you know, against some of the best players in the world. But I think at the end of the day, you kind of can't really... You know, you can't really criticise our defence for not defending that goal in the moment because it was a world-class goal. My only problem is that, you know, he probably could have been closed down a lot earlier by the midfield when he picked the ball up in sort of 40 yards out from goal. No one about midfield was missing. Martin O was well out of position. Declan Rice was too deep. And then it allowed Hazard to do what he loves doing, and that is picking the ball up with a bit of space, turning and then running at defenders. That's what he does. That's how he's carved out the reputation he's got. And he's a world-class footballer. That's why he's probably going to play for Real Madrid next year. And it's probably good because it means he can't do it to us again.
But the thing is, we've conceded 50 goals this season. We're one of only seven teams in the league to have conceded 50 goals or more. And two of them are already relegated. There's teams below us. No one above us has conceded more goals than we have. I think, and you know, although against Chelsea it was Hazard who will probably be playing for Real Madrid next year, and
you're toning it down now. He said probably.
Well,
so
I'm saying he's playing for Real Madrid next season, but we've been undone by players who'll be playing in the Championship next season. Mm. Conceded three at home to Huddersfield, which you know I was obviously not happy about at all, and I know we got the win in that game, but I think it just. It highlights, if we needed it to be highlighted anymore, how much we need to focus on our defence or just stopping the ball going in the net next season.
There's an interesting comment on our live stream now from Hammerhead 2073. It says Creswell was too slow. It's been noticeable over the past few games, and I can't really disagree with that. In that, you know, with that goal, especially we're talking about Hazard's first goal. Everyone's focusing on the midfield and the centre backs, but you know, throughout the game. Our fullbacks. I mean, I thought Fredericks did, you know, an okay job, but you know, he was. You could see the look on his face sometimes. You know, patting out the balls went over his head out of play and stuff like that. But defensively, I think Creswell has been, you know, quite slow, a bit off the pace. Not the player that we remember when he first signed for the club, probably because of that injury picked up a couple of years ago. So these are positions that we need to fix. You know, all our focus as fans is looking at. Okay, well, how can we replace Arnautovic, Hernandez, Perez in the summer? But really, I think it's our defence, because you're right, Will. You know, we conceded 50 goals this year against teams that we shouldn't be conceding goals against. We need to start thinking, okay, how can we shore this defence up? Because we're okay going forward. We know we're okay going forward. It's defensively that we need to really start looking at ourselves and start fixing in the summer.
Do you think, in terms of fixing it, it's a case of new personnel, or is this a system or coaching thing? Because actually... Creswell aside, and obviously various other fullbacks aside, not least Masuaku, who I know you all love, if we take some of West Ham's defenders individually, there's been quite a lot of praise flying around. You know, Balbuena, rated. Yep. Diop, rated. Is it a case of needing centre-halves, or is it a case of actually just looking at how they play together?
I was just going to touch on that, actually. Earlier on in the season, everyone was getting really excited about Balbuena and Diop in particular, and kind of rightfully so. They did play well, and they looked like they were forging a partnership quite quickly. They've both had spells out the team through injury this season as well, which hasn't helped. But I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. I think we, at wing-backs, we've been saying for weeks now that we need to focus there. Zabaleta's obviously at the tail end of his career. Creswell's never quite been the same. And as much as I'll keep calling him King Arthur until the day I die, not everyone else is as much of a fan as I am. And I obviously do understand that as well. He's not up to it. And I think the worrying thing is, earlier on in the season, we were all quite confident of where West Ham would need to improve. Like at the end of the season, wing-backs is definitely one of those positions, or like both wing-backs. But as the season's progressed, we've become more and more... No one was thinking before Christmas, oh, we'll have to worry about Arnautovic in the summer. That sort of came out of nowhere. And now everyone's focus has gone, we're going to need to get some strikers in. Perez is doing nothing, so we can't rely on him for anything. everyone's still a bit unsure about Hernandez as well. So all of a sudden, whereas before it was quite clear, oh, it's all right, we'll only need to perhaps shore up a little bit at wing back because Balbuena and Diop are going to be fine. So is Fabianski, maybe a midfielder or two to cover up for Noble, but we're fine going forward. It's all of a sudden, oh, actually, there's still quite a lot of positions that need attention in the summer.
Where should West Ham strengthen? You can get in touch on 0208 70 20 558 or at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. Coming up, lots more to discuss about the Chelsea game, but also there is the small matter of some Champions League football.
This is Love Sport.
It's the West Ham fan show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and James Jones and Will Pugh of West Ham World. And we're going to talk more about the Chelsea game, but I also want to touch on the Champions League action we've got to look forward to tonight. We'll be bringing you updates throughout the show of both Ajax versus Juventus and the big one for the English fans, Manchester United hosting Barcelona. Gents, how do we see these games going?
Well, I was lucky enough to have my friend over from Norway staying with me last night, who's flown over for the game at Old Trafford, and he's full of confidence. Foolish
simply because of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Barcelona fan then, right?
Yeah, huge Man United fan, and he's come over, he's loving what's happened to the club recently, which makes sense. Like, it's understandable because who can't? He's got a club legend doing really well there. I think beating Barcelona over two legs is a stretch too far. I don't think they should even be in the tie anyway, because the decision that got them through against Paris Saint-Germain was, questionable to say the least. Exactly, yeah. So I think they got through that in, for want of a better word, in a bit of lucky fashion. But I can't see them doing Barcelona over two legs. They're walking the league this season. I fancy them for the tournament anyway. And I just
fancy Barca for the Champions League, full stop.
I think so, yeah. It was City until last night, to be fair. But City and Barcelona in the final, obviously, unless they meet each other before. But I think it'll be one step too far for Solskjaer and United.
I can't disagree. As long as it's not Tottenham in the final, I don't mind. I can't disagree. I think City will beat Tottenham in the next leg. You got Beckham at the Etihad, didn't you? And then, in terms of United Barcelona, as much as Solskjaer's done a very good job at Man United since he took the job, I think that Barcelona got a little bit too much for him.
Yeah, and that United form is starting to slip. Ollie is still at the wheel, but the wheels are now starting to wobble.
It's mad, isn't it?
Somewhat.
As soon as he gets his contract, it all starts going a little bit ropey.
It's like Adebayor. Adebayor used to, when he needed a deal, he would be the best striker in the world. Then he'd put pen to paper and immediately just have a nap.
Are you just compared Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to Emmanuel Adebayor?
Yeah, well,
that's what's happened.
You've got to think thematically. We'll move on quickly before I lose my job. The Champions League is obviously a competition about riches, it's about super clubs, and it's about teams who are the big heroic units, really, of European football. Ajax were that once. They're not really seen as that anymore. But, of course, they got rid of Real Madrid in the previous round. No one gave them a chance then. No one is giving them a chance against Juventus. But do you think they could produce another upset?
I mean, if you're relying on Dusan Tadic to...
Who, by the way, was brilliant.
Not a bad player.
No,
I'd have him at West Ham.
I would, but... Again, it sounds like a bit of an easy thing to say, but you'd kind of imagine that if your main attacking threat is Dusan Tadic and that's against Cristiano Ronaldo,
Did you just compare Dusan Tadic to Cristiano Ronaldo?
you kind of know which way it's going to go. Although, I did a piece in the week on Edwin van der Sar, who's behind the scenes at Ajax now, and he's the CEO there, and he's been talking for a long, long time about Ajax making an impression on European football. They're very aware that they are a selling club, but their philosophy has changed in that they just want to try and hold on to those successful youngsters for that little bit longer. And I think it's no surprise to people in Holland that what the Ajax project has come to fruition a little bit more this year. Obviously Real Madrid are in turmoil going into that game. Arguable whether they still are, but I think once again Juventus probably one hurdle too far for a valiant Ajax team.
The question for that valiant Ajax team of trying to hold on to those youngsters for a bit longer is of course very relevant to West Ham as well, because there's this issue of Declan Rice. We've seen in the Ajax example, Frankie de Jong has already signed a deal with Barcelona ahead of a summer move. Matthijs de Ligt is being linked with making a move in the same direction, quite possibly, to Catalonia. they're not really managing it, which isn't their fault. It's just the case when you've got these wonderful players, super clubs want them. Do you think West Ham are going to fall foul of the same predicament?
With Declan, I assume you mean?
Yeah. No, Mark Noble.
I think we're quite lucky to keep hold of him all these years. I think there is... We know how good he is. Okay, he wasn't great against Chelsea on Monday night. He got overrun by Ruben Loftus-Cheek a little bit, who got the better of him. But it's no secret that a lot of the big clubs are going to start sniffing around him. And, you know, unless we're in European competition, it's going to be very difficult to keep hold of players like Declan Rice. And if other young players come through and we're still in the same position where we're fighting for the top 11, you know, it's going to be difficult for, you know, to keep hold of players. And, you know, Man United or Man City or any of the big clubs in Europe come calling and say to Declan, come on, it's going to be hard for him. So, yeah, we are going to... I think that will happen.
He has also had quotes attributed to him within the last week or so, saying how he wants to be the long-term West Ham captain and
but
that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if he has said that, then great. You want that. You want your young players to come out and say that, but at the end of the day, in this day and age, in this game, in 2019, the way football is, the way the market is, money talks. And if Man United rock up and go, we'll give you $200,000 a week, we're going to go, sorry mate, can't match that. good luck. And I think that is the long and short of it. And unfortunately, he might say that now. How many times have you had a player go, I want to stay for the rest of my life, and then 6 months later he's off?
Well, Fabian Delph, it was 6 days later.
Exactly.
At Villa.
So,
it was brutal.
You know, it happens, and I think we a lot of fans are going to have to accept that there is, there's more of a chance of that happening than there is him actually being, you know, the club's next Mark Noble.
This summer, do you think? Because there's been a lot of stories come out that were a bit newer. There was, first of all, the line was City, wasn't it? But there's been a lot of clamour in the last week or so again about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wanting to build his team around young English talent.
I think it's too soon.
I agree.
I think it's too soon. And not just for Declan Rice and his development and his game, but I think it's also too soon for the club to be selling a player like that. Because at the end of the day, the way the season's gone, the club and the board have gone a long way in fixing a lot of the issues that has happened previously in the last couple of years since we moved stadiums. And the way I see it is that if they then go into this summer after what has been a relatively, you know, safe season, it's been a nice season where we've not had to worry about relegation apart from those first four games. We've not been looking over our shoulders really. So it's been a nice safe season. For them to go, oh, we've done all that hard work, you know, we've turned ourselves around, you know, we've brought in a world-class manager, we've spent £100 million, but then we sold our best young talent in the summer. Fans are going to lose their, you know, lose their heads. So I don't think the club really, they don't know, they can't really afford to then undo all that hard work with the fans, because they've done so much to try and fix that relationship. And they'll undo it all just by selling Declan Rice after, one good season, half-decent season.
And also, cynically, if they hold on to Declan Rice for that little bit longer, they might get more money. If you keep the player until he is that world-class talent, rather than the potential to be that, you are going to get more from whichever club it is comes in. Thinking about players' futures and players whose futures could be away from West Ham, I was interested after our conversation last week to see Arnautovic start against Chelsea and to see him actually put himself about. Do you think he went some way to winning the fans back over?
I'm not sure, really. I just think, I don't know about your point of view on this, James, but from my point of view, it just seems, I think I said this last time I was on, was that it just seems like a guy, when you hand your notice in at a job, and if you've got a 3 month notice to work, then in those 3 months, you don't particularly pull your weight too much.
Do you think Marko Arnautovic is waking up every morning and crossing a day off on his calendar before the transfer window?
I don't think he's doing that. I think, you know, he knows that, you know, there may or may not be a deal on the table. I mean, as far as we know, there might not be a deal anymore. I think we've all just come to expect that he's going to leave in the summer, but that might not even be the case. You know, there's no guarantee, particularly the way he's been playing recently, that anyone's going to come in for him in the summer. We're led to believe that deal from China is still there, and, you know, the offer's still open, but you know, that might change between now and the summer, because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, you know. So I think he's not been great. I don't know what all the fuss was about on Monday night. I didn't think he was especially brilliant. I think he was better than previous weeks, but it didn't blow me away.
I think that's what it was. It was the improvement.
Yeah,
on...
I mean, he ran around a little bit more. and he, you know, okay, he had a couple of chances. I thought he'd scored in that second half.
Or yeah, you lost the first half. You went mental, second didn't
half.
You?
Oh, yeah, I jumped off the sofa. then I thought it was ruled out because there was a foul, it was offside, and then I realised it was 2 yards wide anyway. Thought,
that's why he's not celebrating. Yeah.
We need VAR for stuff like this.
We do, yeah. But I just didn't. I didn't think. Oh, Arnie's back. Here he is. This is the player we once loved and knew all about, and couldn't wait to see play. It was just like, oh, he's running around a little bit more effort. Well done, mate. It is what it is. I think if we can get him to score a couple more goals between now and the end of the season, great. I don't expect him to. I think we're all just waiting for him to leave. It's quite sad, really.
And
you can hear the sadness in my face.
We've got to bear in mind as well
face
that
voice.
He's, as well as he played before, like this saga, if you like, came up in January, as well as he played before that, we're actually paying him more now, because amongst all the furor, he got a pay rise, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
So, maybe I should try that. Oi, I'm off to China. Keep me. Well, you have certainly got Arnautovic till the end of the season, and regardless of how he performs, the big question now is, where are you going to finish? Seventh looks a bridge too far, but top 10, don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and James Jones and Will Pugh of West Ham World here on Love Sport Radio for our West Ham fan show. And the big question now is, where are West Ham going to finish? Currently 11 points. 11 points? That would be terrible, wouldn't it? That would be a record. 11th in the table, 4 points off Watford in the top 10. Is that something that you can break into?
I know James was saying earlier on about it's been a season that's comfortable and we're not looking over our shoulders. I've certainly started to now. I had a Crystal Palace gleefully remind me today that they're only 3 points behind us and they've got a better goal difference. So we are sitting 11th now. Bournemouth, who are 13th, they're only 4 points behind us as well. And although their goal difference is considerably worse, so you could potentially call it five, we've got some tough games coming up towards the end of the season. Palace have still got to play Cardiff and Bournemouth, which are winnable games for them. I think looking up is probably more unrealistic than looking over our shoulders, I think. Worryingly.
It's quite frustrating. I mean, I know I said earlier it's been a nice season, so you've not had to worry about relegation as such, but it has been frustrating, particularly over the last couple of months. We've gone from competing for the top seven to the top eight, the top nine, and now the top 11. And I think we'll finish 11th. And that's because I think although we've got some tough fixtures, we have been performing better against the bigger teams, as you were, and I think that we can, in terms of our home games that we've still got. We've only got two home games. Pick 6 points up of those. I think we can win both of those games, and then we could sneak it back into the top 10. But I don't think that we've got anything to worry about in terms of relegation, Will. I think, you know, maybe pushing it a little bit there.
I just mean looking over our shoulder, maybe finish 12th or 13th.
I mean, after all that excitement that, you know, okay, we could finish 7th. Oh, it would be really good if we finished 7th, or it wouldn't be really good if we finished 7th because of the Europa League and got start your season in May or whatever it is. And to then thinking, oh, 8th would be quite good. And then thinking, actually, 9th wouldn't be too bad, would it? And now it's like, oh, do you know, we'll be lucky if we finish 12th here. And it's been quite an anti-climax to what promised to be quite an encouraging end to the season. And I don't know whether, you know, Pellegrini's started blaming injuries and stuff on the form recently, and I get that. But, you know, half the players that were injured 3 or 4 months ago when we were winning football matches. So I don't really buy into what Pellegrini said on that front. You know, I think we've just got to make sure that we don't just let this season just play out into nothing. You know, we're always hearing that, you know, he wants the players to finish the season strongly, but we hear that every season of every different manager. It's time they did it, really.
I think what's important, though, to note although it's easy and everyone does it, you know, you look at what position you end up finishing in the table, it's important to note that at this stage we've achieved exactly the same amount of points now as we did in the whole of last season. So we've still got 5 games to play, albeit some of them are tough. But you'd hope that there's going to be at least 6 to 7 points still left to earn. And I think if you look at that, wherever that ends up putting you in the table, although that is important to look at and relative, I think if we've improved by another 9 or 10 points or 7 or 8 points on last season, it's still a step in the right direction, albeit that it might be frustrating if that only gives us an improvement of 1 or 2 places compared to last year and we're still bottom half.
I don't disagree with that. And I think that with all that's, you know, that's just been said, I think we have to look at this season as a positive in terms of the progress that's been made. It might not seem like progress in terms of the league table, but you're right. You know, we've got so many points we did last season now. We've got 5 games still to play. And, you know, the work that's been done off the pitch in terms of the foundations that have been laid, in terms of what Pellegrini's tried to do, I think has been quite encouraging. The fact is that he hasn't got the full squad to be able to really execute that plan and that game plan and that mentality. We keep hearing big team, we've spoken about so many big team, big club mentality.
You're not a fan of that, are you?
I mean, it's all very well saying it, but go and do it every week. And, you know, I'd rather him not said it at all, because now we're like, where's that big club mentality gone when we only just beat Huddersfield? So where's that gone? And it's like, well, you're kind of giving fans this expectation that suddenly we've turned into a top six club when in reality we haven't. We're nowhere near that. And it's going to take a couple more years for us to get anywhere near that and a lot more investment. So, but you're right. I think there has, you know, we have to look at this season as progress. But then the summer needs to be more investment, and we're led to believe that it's not going to be anywhere near the same level as investment, which is frustrating, but you kind of got to understand it, given financial fair play rules now and all the rest of it. So, but if we can get the right players in and ship out the deadwood, the right deadwood, then there's no reason why we can't then next season build on what we've done this season. And, you know, you have to look at that as, you know, a guaranteed, solid, you know, top 10 to top 8 finish. You know, I say top 10 at, you know, at the very, very least, because I can't remember the last time we finished the top 10 was the last season at Upton Park.
But don't you think that should have applied this year as well?
Should have applied this year. But then on the flip side, Pellegrini's right in terms of, had we not had all those injuries, even 3 or 4 months ago, you know, we probably would have won games that we didn't, that we only just scraped through a draw or something like that. Yarmolenko, Lanzini, if we had Lanzini at the beginning of the season, no one knows how we would have got on, because he wouldn't have had that injury, he wouldn't be a little bit shaky, which I've noticed in his game at the moment. So it's difficult to tell, but, you know, I think that, you know, another summer of investment where I think we'll be a lot better next season.
For you as fans, how important is it to finish in the top 10? Because looking in from the outside, you could argue that that difference between 11th and 10th is actually pretty arbitrary. What does it mean? But for you guys, does it have some kind of symbolic importance?
I just think that's what people look at, isn't it? It's what fans look at. It's what journalists.
Top 10, isn't it?
Yeah, it's what everyone within football, whether you're a fan, a journalist, or an impartial bystander, when you look and you say, oh, how'd you get on last season? Although I made the point just then that we've already achieved the same amount of points as last year with 5 games to spare, and you hope that we're going to pick up a few more between now and the end of the season. You know, I think people within the club, the manager, the board, they'll be looking at things like that. They'll be looking at the amount of points as opposed to how that translates into the position you finish in the table. But where you finish in the table also equals pound notes at the end of every year, doesn't it? Like,
yeah.
The higher up you finish, I'm not sure what the exact brackets
are.
$2.5 million
a position, I think.
Yeah, which is it's a fair old whack, isn't it? So, although it is important to me, because we've had the argument before about the race to seventh, where I think, well, what's the point of us going every week and spending our money if you're not going to want to finish seventh? Mm-hmm. And it's also, I think, arrogant to assume that, oh, if we don't get seventh and if we don't start in the Europa League, that next year we'll be really good in the FA Cup and we'll definitely finish sixth, so we won't have to go through the qualifiers. Let's be frank, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, well, West Ham are never good in the FA Cup anyway.
Exactly,
are they,
and so. I think that's what frustrates me a little bit about this now, that if we end up finishing you know, take the points total aside, if we end up finishing 12th this year, say, because I think that probably is worst case scenario looking at the league.
Yeah.
If we finish 12th and our performance in the cup with the Wimbledon thing, it makes that look far more embarrassing. And all of a sudden, when you look at it as a season on the whole, you think, 12th place, out of the FA Cup to Wimbledon, now at the League Cup, didn't do anything in there. It's kind of just another stale season. And the sort of the feeling that, oh, it's all right, we got 6 points more than we did last year, or 4 or 5 more points. Although technically on paper it's progress, really, for the fans who go every week and spend the money, you know, it's not all that, is it?
Well, it's about continuing to build, isn't it? And improving season on season. And if West Ham are going to improve next season, they're going to need all their best players to still be there. One man you're going to be desperate to keep hold of is Felipe Anderson. But will he still be at the club come next
year? This is Love Sport.
Next year. Felipe Anderson was a massive signing for West Ham in the summer. Not just the fact that that transfer fee could rise to over 40 million quid with add-ons, not just the fact that he's a fantastic player who'd been really impressing at Lazio, but because it was a statement. This felt like a signing where West Ham were announcing themselves and saying, listen, you know what, we're a big club, we can dine at the top table, and we can sign players who've been linked with Barcelona, who've been linked with Real Madrid, who've been linked with Chelsea. It's been money well spent. 8 goals, 4 assists in the Premier League so far. But now those same European clubs are sniffing. Crucial that West Ham hold on to him. But can you do it?
Well, I thought it was quite interesting because this came up because there were some comments this week on Sky Sports talking about that, saying the club understands that Sky Sports sources understand that the club, under no circumstances, will they consider letting Felipe Anderson go this summer. And whilst that's an admirable sentiment, first of all, and if that's true, then that's great. Secondly, we know that plenty of clubs have made statements like that about big players in the past, and then sure enough, we'll see them scuttle off when a big offer comes in the summer. But thirdly, I just thought it was interesting when you compare it to the comments that Pellegrini was given a lot of stick for a few weeks ago around Declan Rice. He was asked about Declan Rice, and his response, which to me seemed quite pragmatic and honest and sensible as a fan, was that, well, if the offer's right for the player and the offer's right for the club and he wants to go, then, you know, perhaps it could be done. I think it was an exasperated answer to a question he's been asked countless times since Declan Rice first made a successful pass in training, let alone done anything on the pitch. So I just thought it was interesting how you get a line comes out the club about a player like Anderson, who is important and was a big marquee signer, as you mentioned, Johnny. But I think Declan Rice is just as important, but just because we haven't spent tens of millions of pounds on him, he is worth that to us, or certainly will be soon. And, you know, I just thought it was quite interesting to see the difference between the two lines that came out of the club.
I think you're right. I think, you know, I didn't actually look at it like that until you said it. You know, I think with the whole Declan Rice thing, I don't know whether it was the case that the club perhaps didn't have the opportunity to come out with that sort of line before Pellegrini had made his comments. I don't know, but it is a little bit weird that they took a relatively different stance on both players. It baffles me how any of the top clubs are even interested in Felipe Anderson, because he's
Real Madrid, apparently.
Oh, I mean, I don't think there's any truth in that. I mean, really? Are they really interested in Felipe Anderson? He's not a Real Madrid player. I think, you know, he doesn't...
Good do you think he is?
He's not consistent enough. And, you know, I was talking to my mates about this on Monday night when I think he got pushed off the ball by someone, I don't know who it was, from behind. Clearly didn't know where he was on the pitch and got just shoved off the ball, and Chelsea went on the attack. And it was frustrating. And a mate of mine said in my WhatsApp group that, you know, he was like, he's actually not very good, is he? And although I was
he's
like...
He's quite good.
And I was like, no, he's good, but it's like someone like said, you know, he's no Payet. And I'm like, well, obviously he's no Payet. But there's a difference in that when we had Dimitri Payet, you know, this is a guy that could change a game, you know, regardless of whether he wanted to or not. He was that good that, you know, he could change a game, and he'll grab the game by the scruff of its neck and he'll go and change it. Whereas Anderson has the ability to do that, and I genuinely believe he does. I think he's that good, but he doesn't seem that interested to be that player that can go and change a game. It doesn't seem as if he's always that bothered whether he is or he isn't involved. He kind of lets the game pass him by sometimes. He did at stages on Monday night, I felt, although he did have his moments. What we want from Felipe Anderson is the type of performance that we saw against United early this season, the type of performance that we saw against Southampton away when he overturned the game.
Whether or not this is a serious comment, we've just had someone letting us know that West Ham are a good championship team at best, apparently. So stop letting Spurs fans follow this account.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah, nice stadium, mate. On to more pressing matters. I think that's a bit harsh, harsh. I think the whole Payet comparison is a little bit strong.
I do think Payet played in a better team. The players around him were playing better, which gave him more freedom. So in a weird way, he had less pressure on him because Lanzini and Sacco were still playing well.
I think you're bang on, but James's point is a very good one, where the thing that was so important about Payet and the thing that made him so exceptional was his willingness to go, you know what, this isn't going our way and I'm going to do something against the run of play and I'm going to change the game. As you said, Felipe Anderson doesn't do that in the same way. Do you think he's a luxury player? Do you think he's someone that when West Ham are playing comfortable attacking football in a game they're dominating, he's going to excel? But actually, if you ask him to do something in a game where you're up against Chelsea and you're 2-0 down, he's just going to go missing?
Yes and no. I remember specifically when Payet was doing what he was doing in a West Ham shirt, it was quite a commonly, you know, told story that Noble had said to Payet, look, you do your thing, we'll do your running for you. And it, buying into that mindset, as you're saying there, that you have luxury players. Lanzini's not exactly the most defensive minded, nor was Sacco, really, let's be honest, but that trio up front worked really well. And that was because Noble was playing out of his skin and had his best season in a West Ham shirt that I can remember. But as were all the other players, the defence were playing well. Winston Reid was outstanding that season, as was Cresswell. So you had more players around them. The balance of the team was better and more confidence at the back. There's no way in 1,000 years we conceded 50 goals that season, the last season at Upton Park. And, you know, you had three luxury players then, I think, in the team with Payet, Lanzini and Sacco. They didn't do any defensive work, but it still worked.
I think you're right. I think that season was a little bit of an anomaly, being the last season at Upton Park. You know, there was a complete buzz, not just in the stands but on the pitch as well, in the dressing room, and that then allowed the likes of Payet and the rest of them to really sort of get involved in that and get on board with the whole feel good factor and start, you know, playing with a little bit of freedom, and you know that worked wonders. But where Anderson is concerned, you know, he's come on a big fee. He's come to a league he's never played in before. He's very lightweight anyway. And I just think that sometimes he's quite happy just to sort of let the game go by him, and then occasionally he might pop up with a nutmeg. He loves his nutmegs.
Unfortunately, they don't count on the score line, though.
Well, Soccer AM did a thing the other day. Remember my stat a few weeks ago now, that, you know, he'd made a certain amount of nutmegs in a certain amount of minutes per game or something. They've actually got him at the top of they've got Nutmeg League now, Meg Nuts, and he's at the very top. And he did one on Monday night as well. So he's, but that's all at the moment. That's all he's good for, is megging people, and for me that's not good enough. You know, you spent what, 45 million quid on him. You know, he scored 8 goals and 4 assists or whatever it is. But you know, you should be looking at doubling. You know, doubling, at least getting 3 or 4 more goals, load more assists. I mean, I think Payet ended his first season with what, 12 goals and 15 assists or something like that, and we paid 10 million quid for him. So I think that, you know, if Anderson is going to be at the club next season, he's got to be doing more, much more, because otherwise what's the point? You know, we might as well just sell him and then bring in a couple more players that are happy to work, players like Robert Snodgrass that will just, you know run the reds off for 90 minutes and actually be quite effective for 90 minutes.
Talking of players who might not be at the club next season, has anyone seen Andy?
This is Love.
If only his ankles were as strong as his haircut. We're hearing that Andy Carroll is in trouble again, and that could be game over for his West Ham career.
Well, I think this one is game over now because it's the same injury, because we touched on it before when the news first broke, how, you know, it's likely that it's going to be the end of his career and he's got another ankle injury, and will we see him in a West Ham shirt again? Probably not. But it's basically become official in the last week that confirming that it is, he has injured his ankle again and he's undergone surgery to try and solve the problem, which has basically, whether or not it's ended his West Ham career, we can't say that for certain yet, because obviously he's still got the option in his contract to trigger another year. However, it is important to note that with that option, we have to give him a pay rise if we trigger the option. It could only be for a pound, but you'd still be getting £90,001 every week. So it's very, very unlikely.
It's that £1 I'd be bothered by.
it's like that offer that Arsenal made Liverpool Suarez.
You know what? I will get so angry because I still don't. Anyway, that, I can't see how you're allowed to ignore a release clause, but there we go. The other point with Carroll is that he's 30. And there'd be an argument to be made that actually on that money, even if he were fit, is he of the quality at that kind of getting into veteran status age now that actually 90 grand, are you better off spending that elsewhere?
I think so. I mean, on his day, I love Andy Carroll. I've always loved Andy Carroll. But the fact of the matter is, if you're not going to be fit for 80% of the season at least, 75-80% of the season at least, then you're useless.
Now, you did have someone arguing his cause for you, didn't you, recently?
Was it Andy Carroll's mum?
Didn't you have someone arguing that?
I had one of my writers at West Ham World, Adam Netherborough, he's probably listening now. He said he was going to call up, but he hasn't yet. Maybe
wind him up.
Adam, if you are listening, you need to call up and justify this, because I don't know what you're talking about. But he messaged me last night and said, I think we need to offer him a new deal. We need to give him a chance. We need to pay him half of what he's on, or reduce his wages and then pay him and keep him fit and pay him, because the chances are, and it'd just be our luck, that he'll go and sign for Tottenham and score a lot of goals. And for me, I mean, I can see his rationale. I mean, I don't think Tottenham are really that interested in Andy Carroll these days. But I can see his thinking in that. But at the end of the day, for 90 grand, and given, you know that's, we can put that on a player that's going to be fit and is going to, you know, why don't we give half of that money to Declan Rice to time down for another 5 years? So I think, as much as I love him, his time's up at West Ham, and, you know, at the end of the day, we haven't really missed him this season. I think even if he'd been fit for every game, I don't think we've made that much of an impact because of the way we play under Pellegrini. So what's the point of keeping him?
Yeah, and you could be forgiven for forgetting that Carroll was even a West Ham player at all. We've just had a text into the show saying, Andy Carroll is a donkey, now he is a lame donkey. With that in mind, whether or not that might be slightly harsh,
it's a bit rude, isn't it?
Carroll hasn't played very much football. And the point of, you know, he could go to a Spurs, he could score goals for a Spurs. Is a Premier League club actually going to take a punt on Andy Carroll?
Well, I must admit, first of all, Spurs have got plenty of other players in white shirts with the chicken on the front who will score goals against West Ham.
And they've already got lumps in the form of Fernando Llorente.
Exactly. I don't think we, you know, if Andy Carroll goes and signs for them and pulls on a shirt, that if he doesn't do that, that Spurs aren't going to score goals against West Ham next season. But you mentioned that earlier on, James, about you think he's going to go Championship. And I don't think that's true. I think there's still teams in the Premier League, certainly in that bottom six or the projected bottom six next season,
rocking up at Burnley with Peter Crouch.
Literally something like that. Yeah, it may be a Brighton. I know sort of Houghton's style isn't exactly, you know, it isn't exactly ticky-tacka pressing football, is it? As much as the players they've signed would suggest that it was going to be. You could easily see him in a Brighton shirt, couldn't you?
Or you could see him at Leeds if they came up.
Potentially, yeah.
I mean,
but it's going to be that bottom six.
Is he a Bielsa player? I'm not too sure whether he's a Bielsa player.
Back to Newcastle, even. Land of his fathers.
Potentially. Or America. You said America earlier on, didn't you? I don't think China, but I could see him in LA, couldn't you?
I could see him in LA. I mean, his missus would love to go out to LA as well, I'm sure.
Do you reckon they'd just ask him to grow a beard and pretend that he was Ibrahimovic? Like, no, he's definitely the same guy. Just sound a bit more Swedish, Andy. It'll be fine.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see him in an LA shirt or Miami. I'm not sure about a Shanghai SIPG or Guangzhou Evergrande or something like that.
Is he going to Miami? I mean, if you're David Beckham and you've got your new club and you want to sign your fashionable player to announce yourselves on the world stage, is Andy Carroll going to be your first point of call?
Yeah, he's got that, those long locks.
It's true. Likes a night out, so Florida could be good.
Loves a night out. I think, you know, I can see it now in about, you know, 6 to 8 months' time would be Andy pitched in a Daily Mail of Andy Carroll
and Wayne Rooney
and David Beckham all out on the Raz in America, living the dream, you know, all just, you know, wasting, you know, the millions on Grey Goose.
Other brands of vodka are available, of course, and you shouldn't be drinking any of them, particularly if you're listening to this show, because we're very responsible. Is there any ill feeling at all towards Andy Carroll from the West Ham faithful?
Certainly not from me.
No,
definitely not. I think what he has done when he's been on the pitch in a West Ham shirt will be remembered forever. My overriding feeling towards him, I don't know about you, James, but my overriding feeling is one of, it's almost pity, really, and I just feel gutted because he hasn't played anywhere near as many games as we would have liked to see him. And I genuinely think that there was a period of time, wasn't there, where he was playing week in, week out, where he was the linchpin of our team. You got so excited when he was back. Mm. You knew he was going to score. You knew even if he didn't, he was going to give the opposition such a tough game, and he was going to give him hell.
He's going to break a few noses, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's it. And it just made the opposition defenders scared. They were always, oh, here we go. We've got another 90 minutes up against this guy, just getting smashed around for 90 minutes. And he did. He brought something to the team. He was a focal point, and he was great. And I love seeing him in a West Ham shirt. I do think the time's up now, though, and that is a shame.
Yeah, I love him. As I've said before, I'll always have a place in my heart for Andy Carroll. Just because he has scored some quite important goals for us in the past. I'll always remember the hat-trick against Arsenal in the last season at Upton Park. His million goals against
Swansea. Our producer,
Swansea,
by the way, is an Arsenal fan, and he's just broken down in tears. Lol. So thank you for that.
I mean, 1,000 or 1,000,000 goals he scored against Swansea in his career, most of them for us. I mean, he loved to go against Swansea, didn't he?
There's that bicycle kick against Paris.
Exactly. Oh,
the Chelsea goals.
The Chelsea goal, yeah. I mean, He's had some fantastic moments for us, and it's just been really, really unfortunate for him that he's had these injury problems. And I think, okay, he loved his social life, and, you know, and that probably hasn't helped. But I think a lot of the time, a lot of people forget that it's not his fault that he's got these ankle injuries. You know, I think that one that it left him out for like 9 or 10 months, that was an injury that basketball players get. Mm. A complete freak football injury. And that's not his fault. It's just the way that he is, the way that he plays. And it just, you know, he just happened to pick up this freak injury. But a lot of people, you know, they blame him, and, you know, they moan about him, and they call him, you know, horrible names and stuff. And it's like, well, hang on. You know, this is a guy that is making a living out of football. Although there are these rumours that he doesn't particularly like football, you know, at the end of the day, I think he'd prefer to be on the pitch than be in the stands, regardless of what he's earning. So I don't blame him. You know, I don't hold any ill feeling towards him. You know, I wish him all the best when he does leave the club, and, you know, it's just a shame that it didn't really work out.
Yeah, and, you know, ankle injuries are some of the most common injuries sustained by horses, so he's not on his own. It's just bad luck.
Bit rude.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Poor old Andy.
Have you not seen the video of the horse heading the massive football along with vaguely good control, and someone tweeted it with the caption, Andy Carroll's been working on his first touch.
This could be the end of this man's career at West Ham United. It's just an emotional time for all the fans and certainly for the player, and you're comparing him to a horse.
Have you seen him run?
Yes.
In terms of destination, then, where do you think he'd go? We've had various clubs mooted. You're saying he's better than Championship level.
Well, I think I can't. I know Will said that he's better than Championship level, but I just don't see another Premier League club at this moment in time, given his recent injury record. Forget his past injury record, his recent injury record. I can't see anyone that going, because it's going to be relatively expensive. And I think when you're in a relegation battle, because I think that's, if he does stay in the Premier League, that's where he'll be. That's an expensive signing to make when there's no guarantee he's going to be fit. Whereas a Championship club chasing promotion, you can take that gamble, really, can't you? Because you're chasing promotion, and I think they could probably afford him.
Yeah, he'd have been perfect for sort of a Huddersfield if they'd stayed up. You'd have thought, if he goes out the door and Arnautovic leaves, that's a couple of gaps in that West Ham squad. And in just a moment, we'll be talking about who the new strikers should be. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the West Ham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. And just a quick reminder that we are underway in the Champions League action for the evening. It's Ajax 0, Juventus 0 and United 0, Barcelona 0. We'll be bringing you updates from those games throughout the show. And also, we've got Championship action for you, as ever, here on Love Sport Radio with a London focus. We'll be bringing you updates from Brentford versus Ipswich Town, Millwall versus QPR. That's a massive game down the bottom of the table. And of course, for a top versus bottom clash, Norwich City against Reading, still 0-0 in all of those games. And we've heard the sad news this week from a West Ham perspective that Lionel Scaloni, the former West Ham player, is in hospital.
Yeah, he's just come out, but he had a bicycle accident in Mallorca. He was riding his bike along the road and a car hit him. There's been no confirmation yet whether or not that was a West Ham fan still angry about the 2006 FA Cup final.
I'm sure it wasn't.
Botched clearance. But he's a little bit smashed up, and he took to social media in the week to show his injuries. But he's also the manager of Argentina at the moment as well.
Been in charge since November.
Mm. Well, see, I can't believe that. I only found that out about 2 months ago. And I thought, what? He's managing his national team when he couldn't clear the ball properly in an FA Cup final.
Or let it go out for a goal kick.
Probably doesn't affect and your ability as a manager, though.
I don't know. I mean, if you can't do that, as you meant to pass that on to some of the best players in the world playing for Argentina. Well, if I was Lionel Messi, I'd be like, eh? You're managing me when you couldn't do that in the 2006 FA Cup final.
I'm sure Lionel Messi was glued to his TV for the 2006 FA Cup final.
I heard what Teddy Sheringham said about you. You're not managing me.
Well, I think you could take the Gareth Southgate example, couldn't you, where his most famous moment from his career was in an England shirt. It was missing a massive penalty.
It's a good point.
When he was appointed manager of the national team, lots of people, not least me, went, what are you doing? And look at us now. I want him knighted. He looks great in a waistcoat and all of that. Scaloni still... People remembering, shall we say?
Maybe they should just stick Scaloni in a waistcoat and I might warm to him a little bit. I don't know.
Let's be honest, though. Gareth Southgate's penalty miss was nowhere near as bad as Lionel Scaloni's botched clearance.
We could have won the FA Cup if it weren't for him. But I hope he makes a full and quick recovery this
one. Yeah, that said, all the best to him, and hopefully he is back running before too long. In terms of transfer news surrounding West Ham, Maxi Gomez of Celta Vigo, the striker, is one link that's just not going away.
No, he came up again this week, and he's been asked by a journalist in Spain whether or not, asked about his future, and in sort of Eden Hazard fashion, really, he came out and said, I can't really... I can't say either way, and I'm focused.
So being
on...
a flirt, then, again.
Well, I think it was more, it's difficult to say at this stage. No one knows what's going to happen. And I think that is one, we covered a lot of stories, didn't we, in January about who might come and who we're interested in, including Piatek, who's gone to tear it up for AC Milan.
He is dirty. He's a proper centre-forward.
And obviously, but this is one that keeps coming up and keeps coming back. And I think by the sounds of it, the style of player he's quite robust. He's quite an aggressive attacker. And I think he would, there is those comparisons being made to Arnautovic, and that is something that sounds like it might be have more legs than some of the others.
The fact this rumour isn't going away and has seemed to be going on for about 9 years now makes me think that it's never going to happen. It reminds me so much of the whole Batshuayi and Lacazette summer when we, David Sullivan, I know he hasn't come out this time because he learned his lesson from last time, but we're going to spend 40 million quid when we want Lacazette, we want Batshuayi, went on forever, and then we never got neither. And then both of them went into time for top four clubs and did pretty well.
And there are other clubs interested in Gomez as well. Everton had got quite a strong interest, and I think there's a few other teams who would certainly have him if they could.
If this kind of Eden Hazard style flirting with other clubs was being done by a West Ham player, let's say it was being done by Felipe Anderson, would that annoy you? Because I find all this posturing for the benefit of other clubs quite hard to take. It's not acceptable in other walks of life, right? If I went to a party with my girlfriend and a bloke came up to her and said, hi, could I take you out to dinner? And she said, well, you know, I'm unable to commit to that at the moment. I'm currently with Johnny. I'm happy there for now, but come the summer, I'll be open to something. What are you doing? You are a Celta Vigo player. Commit to Celta Vigo.
To be fair.
You're Johnny's girlfriend.
Honestly, if she's listening, I'm in so much trouble.
To be fair, I mean, we did quite a similar thing with Arne Outwich in January, didn't
exactly.
we?
Exactly. Bedroom eyes in China.
The fans are annoyed. And he was flirting heavily with China then. I don't know. I mean, someone like Maxi Gomez, he knows how good he is and he knows the interest. His agent would have been talking. And so he's probably said that, just going, look, I don't know where I'm going to be, but I'm available. Yeah. Come and get me.
And I think with someone like Hazard as well, he can do it because he'll be forgiven anything at Chelsea because he's still by far and away their best player at the moment. And he's done some outstanding things for that club for the last however many years that he's been there. He's one of those where whatever really happens now, it sounds like it's probably going to be Real Madrid, which everyone kind of forgives anyone who goes and signs for Real Madrid anyway. Mm. And I think he's done so much for the club. Chelsea fans love him. He's given Tottenham a few digs along the way as well, which buys him a lot of favour with people. And I think if it's someone like that who has paid their dues at the club and earned their money, as Hazard has repeatedly and for a long time, he could have left last season as well, couldn't he, realistically?
Yeah. I think a lot of people forget as well that Maxi Gomez on that front, he said in January that he wanted to stay at Celta Vigo to try and keep them in La Liga.
Yeah, fair play.
He wanted
to
stay. So I think, I mean, if he is flirting now, then you can't. I mean, if I was a Celta Vigo fan, I'd go, well, do you know what? He did say he didn't want to leave in January because he wanted to save us.
And they are looking safe, by the way.
And they're looking safe. So therefore, do you know what? He's got every right to start, you know, looking a little bit towards ahead for the future and sort of trying to sort of wangle his move to the biggest club he can possibly sign for in the summer.
They could be in trouble though, Celta, because both him and Iago Aspas have been saying, "Listen, I'll keep you up," and then
But they've done that. So if they can recoup a nice fee for the two of those, then they can then reinvest that and then, you know, go again next season. And I just think, you know, if I was a Celta Vigo fan, I'd be like, okay. You know, he's done what he said he would do. He could have left us in January. I mean, he could have easily left in January. We could have signed him. We were quite prepared to activate the release clause and go, right, let's go now. He said, no, I want to stay. I want to keep them up. He's done that. So I think he's got every right to be publicly flirtatious towards a potential move elsewhere.
You know what I find interesting, though? I mean, you say that, Johnny, what Celta Vigo had, I think, 2 points clear of the relegation zone in La Liga at the moment. So there's every chance they could still go down. And I often find it, I've had a few conversations recently with people about players that West Ham should be signing in quotes in the summer, and talk about, you know, mind sweeping from the teams that go down. Obviously Fulham, we've got Sessegnon and Seri.
Huddersfield, Aaron Moy.
That's it. But my view on it is kind of, well, they've gone down with those teams, and granted it's not all their fault. But I just wonder if it's different. If Gomez does end up going down with Celta Vigo, is he in a better or worse than Mitrovic, for example? Like, who would you rather have? But Mitrovic has been proven in the Premier League.
I think you'd take Mitrovic, wouldn't you?
You're right. I would take Mitrovic. And the reason why is, one, he's proven in England. And I think put him in, I mean, he showed it at Newcastle in the Championship, you know, put him in a team that's, you know, performing very well, and he'll score goals. Put him in a relegation threat outside, and, you know, he might struggle every now and then. So I'd take him over Maxi Gomez just because of the experience.
No, I think you're bang on. A quick old goal update from Griffin Park. It's Brentford 1, Ipswich 0. Neil Morpay, who else could it have been, giving the Bees the lead there? And the other transfer rumour for West Ham, which isn't going away, is Declan Rice to United. We'll be talking all things United in just a moment for our opposition view when we speak to Matt Beadle, who's a sports journalist and United fan.
Sport.
Next up for West Ham, it is Manchester United, who are of course in action at the moment, still 0-0 at Old Trafford as they take on Barcelona in the quarter-final of the Champions League. I'm delighted to say we are joined on the line by Matt Beadle, who's a sports journalist and Manchester United fan. Evening, Matt. Thanks ever so much for joining us. First of all, how do you rate United's chances this evening?
Well, pleasure to be on, chaps. I think if you'd asked me a month ago, I would have said that we'd give Barca a decent game. Look, the Champions League is it's always a one-off. Any cup competition is. But when you're playing a Barcelona side that is as strong as this, and you've got someone like Lionel Messi in that front three, I mean, look, it's going to be very, very difficult. I've been watching the first 10 minutes and, you know, Rashford just had a good chance with a free kick, but it's going to be tricky, especially playing at home first.
Matt, just to switch on to the game at the weekend, which I'm sure you thought was a bigger game than the Barcelona one.
Absolutely.
But all I'm hoping for at the moment really is that perhaps you'll be a little bit tired from tonight. Hopefully you'll still be in the tie, so you'll need to save some players for Tuesday, and that will mean you take your mind off of the home game against us. You've got some big games in the Premier League coming up after that. You've got Everton, City and Chelsea, your next three after us. Is there anything else that I can hold on to that means we might get something out of the game?
Any more straws?
Yeah.
to be honest, I think that if you just look at United West Ham over the years, especially late season games, I think we've seen before. One harks back to 1992, obviously, when you guys were relegated, but you beat United and essentially messed up those title plans when Leeds just pipped United to the title. We saw it in 1995, obviously, the final day of the season when Ludic McClosco decided to go absolutely bonkers and foil every shot Andrew Cole threw at him. And, you know, there's history, right? I mean, there's history from the semi-final in 64, I seem to recall. That one from reading up on it, obviously, West Ham tend to get results against United. I mean, you haven't won at Old Trafford in a long time. So, again, that was a last day of the season one, wasn't it, Carlos Tevez?
Yeah.
So I think the fact that the United-West Ham rivalry is always so strong, I think you can hold on to that. And look, we should win at Huddersfield on the penultimate day. I think the relegation battle will be over come the end of the season, so we should beat Cardiff. It's just these immediate fixtures, starting with you guys on Saturday, because we then go to Everton, who look like they're picking up a bit of form, and we host City and Chelsea. So, you know, while it's a cliche, I think it's all really to play for us. I think what we can hold on to from a United perspective is that since the turn of the year, you'd probably say United and West Ham have had contrasting fortunes in a sense. You know, we've kind of kicked on under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Yes, it hasn't gone that well in the past few months, but I think when you look at West Ham's fixtures, pretty much since the Arnautovic debacle, really, it's been a bit up and down for you.
Absolutely, and there's some bad news for United, I'm afraid, Matt, just coming through. It's Barcelona 1, United 0 through Luis Suarez. How big is that in terms of an away goal for the Catalonians?
What a way to hear about it. And Luis Suarez,
it's a Luke Shaw own goal, I'm being told.
Oh, is it really? Well, it's massive. It's massive. The fact that they've scored an away goal. I think we can cling on to the fact that PSG won 2-0 at Old Trafford, and then United went to the Parc des Princes in what was an incredible evening. And actually, like I said at the top of this interview, if you'd asked me a month ago after that game where we'd be now, I'd be very comfortable. But the fact that results have dipped somewhat since then, and there's lots of theories about the fact that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has now been given the job permanently and that's why players are perhaps dropped, I don't think I'd buy into that. I think I was always looking for a result that while we had that manager bounce, and then while he went on and beat Spurs, and everyone said, okay, maybe Ole Gunnar Solskjaer actually has got something as a manager. You know, I always champion on the show, especially in Love Sport, when I've spoken to Richard Lee and David Chidgey and Dave Siegel this week, I said the fact that Michael Carrick and Mike Feeney and Kieran McKenna are very, very integral in what United are doing right now. Yes, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a key part of it, but those three are huge. So as long as they stay part of the coaching staff, I think things will look up. But in terms of that Luis Suarez goal, yeah, look, it's an away goal, and you don't want to concede against Barcelona full stop, but to concede an away goal in the Champions League first leg against Barcelona, no, that's not good.
Matt, what's the priority here in terms of, I mean, is it Champions League? Is it finishing the top four? I mean, it's a very difficult dilemma, and from our point of view, a lovely dilemma to have. But, you know, you're sixth in the table, huge possibility of not even finishing the top four. But then you're in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. I mean, where do you think the priority is for Solskjaer and Man United players?
I think the priority was the FA Cup. I think when he came in, fourth place was a long shot. But the fact that United went on that run, it suddenly became an actual realistic possibility. I don't think Champions League was a priority. I think it very much was the FA Cup. But then losing to Wolves skewed all of that and has kind of skewed those priorities. So for me, on a personal point of view, domestic success has always outweighed anything else. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to see Manchester United win the Premier League because that's your bread and butter. And I would say, if you ask most Harden United fans, they would say the same thing. And the top four is a bit of a stickler for me because, again, I don't necessarily agree with the way the Champions League is and the fact that you can finish fourth place and then go into a League of Champions and potentially win it next season and call yourself the Champions of Europe. I don't mm-hmm. agree with that. And I think that Spurs are very much almost binning off the Premier League in a sense and focusing purely on the Champions League. Mm-hmm. There's a whole aspect of football within that that I don't agree with. But I think the priority, as things stand, for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is to finish fourth so they can get into the Champions League for next year.
Matt, so looking forward to the game at the weekend then, are you just as confident as most United fans seem to be that West Ham haven't really got anything to worry or to worry you and that it's going to be a bit of a walk in the park?
I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park. I don't think a game against West Ham is ever a walk in the park. I think that Fernandes coming back to Old Trafford will be tough to take, tough to watch. And you only have to look at the game at the start of the season where you absolutely annihilated Man United. And look, interestingly, United came back after that, which is, again, a strange one. You know, we beat Juventus, we drew with Chelsea, we had that game against Newcastle where we came back from two goals down and won 3-2. So there was a bounce after that game. But, I mean, we know now that was purely a case of papering over some, you know, rather treacherous cracks under Mourinho. But no, I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park. And like I said, I think the fact that West Ham tend to, I'm not going to say you treat it as a cup final against United, I don't want to offend anybody, but I think there is always that extra incentive. I mean, you only have to look at the last game at Upton Park to see that.
Matt, what do you think of the whole links with Declan Rice over the last few days? I mean, is it 40, 50 million quid being touted as a potential bid? Solskjaer wants to build a team around a young English core. Declan Rice is supposedly on his shortlist. I mean,
I thought you'd say supposedly English for a second there.
Well, I mean, that as well. that as well. Yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Would you like to see Declan Rice in a United shirt in the near future?
I absolutely would love to see Declan Rice in a Man United shirt, yes. I don't think he will leave West Ham yet. I think that he recently signed a new contract, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so December, I think.
Yeah, I think that
it's only 30 grand a week, though, to be fair. And
Is it really?
I know it seems like a lot, but I think for him, they'll have to offer him something else again in the summer because he's an integral part of that team.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's a funny one, Declan Rice. A good mate of mine actually taught him and championed him a couple of years ago and said, just watch out for this kid because he's going to be really, really good. He's a lovely lad. I went to the West Ham Brighton game. The 2-2 where you went 2-0 down and equalised. And I just was transfixed on Declan Rice because I wanted to see how he played. And in that particular game, he didn't have one of his best games, but you could see that he's so comfortable on the ball and he can just pop it 5 yards. He can ping it. We saw at the weekend a delightful little, I think it was Monday night, a delightful little zinger that he played out wide. He fancies himself from range. He's now starting to score more goals. I would love to see him in a United shirt. And 40, 50 million in the current climate isn't that much. I think if you were to look at it, he's, what, 19, 20 years old now. If you look at that as an investment for the next 10 years, that's good money.
Yeah, not bad business at all. Matt, it's been lovely to speaking to you. I'm afraid I'm going to have to put you on the spot with a score prediction for the West Ham game. What are you saying?
I'm going to say that United will nick it 1-0.
1-0. You heard it here first. Matt, thanks ever so much. It's Matt Beadle.
Cheers,
there,
guys.
Sports journalist and United fan. We've heard the United side of things, and coming up, we'll be hearing how West Ham should set up against United.
It's Love Sport. This.
You are back with the West Ham Fan Show, and there have been some big goals in the Championship. It's now Brentford 2, Ipswich 0. Ollie Watkins grabbing the second there. And a massive goal for Reading. It's 1-0 against league leaders Norwich. Miete getting a great goal there. Sheffield United have just gone 1-0 up away at Birmingham. And a huge goal for Rotherham in the relegation fight. It's 1-0 to them at home against Aston Villa. And Tyrone Mings has been dismissed for two bookable offences. So Rotherham could be on for a massive 3 points. But turning our attentions to West Ham, it's Manchester United next. Are you confident? Are you nervous? How should the team set up?
I'm interested to see how he sets up, actually, because I've been, I think I was certainly wasn't the only one in the Everton game to be a bit baffled by the selection, especially the inclusion of Perez. And even last night, I thought it was Monday night against Chelsea, I thought it was a bold move playing Arnautovic and Hernandez. Certainly away against a top six side. That sort of, it's on paper, that sounds like it shows intent. But I'd be disappointed if we'd done that again against United. I think we need to revert back to just the one of the two of them at the head of that three, and then you have Lanzini and Anderson. I'd have Snodgrass back in the team just to a game like that against United, just to give us a chance of staying in the game for a longer period of time.
Yeah, I think Monday night's starting 11 was influenced by, apparently, Antonio broke down in the warm-up with an injury. I think it was due to start, which then led to Arnautovic starting or Hernandez starting, whichever one you want to go with. I'd like to see us start with the team that started the second half. You're right, with Snodgrass in there. I think Snodgrass adds a little bit of energy to our midfield and another outlet. And, you know, it was nice to see that front four start against Chelsea. You know, we've been craving for that front four all season, you know, with Lanzini involved and Arnautovic and Hernandez and Anderson, but it didn't work. And I felt that, you know, the reason why Hernandez was pulled off because he was just too isolated up there. It's not the sort of attacking intent you have when you're away to a team like Chelsea, and I don't think you do the same at Old Trafford. So I'd go with the second half 11. That face Chelsea, and I think we'd stand a decent chance. You know, hopefully United get a few injuries tonight. Not too serious, I'd like to add.
We're not talking full Andy Carroll.
No, we're not talking full Andy Carroll. Just a couple of little, you know,
niggles.
A couple of dead legs or something. Not to De Gea, though, because we don't get many shots on target anyway, so don't need to worry about him, but the other key players.
I just hope they're still in the tie as well, so that they've got that Tuesday night game in their head, because in reality, if they're still in this and they've got half a chance, if it finishes 1-0, if they nick one back, then they will be well up for it, and so will the fans as well, won't they? So therefore, that will be in their minds, whether it affects his squad selection, which you think it may, because it's Saturday, it's the evening game as well, which is just that few hours less of recovery, isn't it, to then go to Barcelona on the Tuesday.
Yeah, I think if they're still in it, you're right, if they're still in it, then the last thing they're going to want is a home game against West Ham United on Saturday. They're going to want to go, right, OK, can we play this second leg as soon as we possibly can?
But unless they get really, really pumped, they are going to still be in it, aren't they? I mean, the Champions League is a funny old competition. We saw it with them coming back against PSG. We've seen it, of course, with Barcelona coming back themselves on multiple occasions. Anything below four, and they're still going to be thinking they've got a chance, aren't they?
I'd say no. I think, with it, especially against a team like Barcelona as well, you're going to go to the new... If Barcelona get, I would say, two, it's probably dead. But
2-0, you're talking.
Yeah, if they make it two, but certainly if they make it three, I think that's definitely done, because no one goes to the Nou Camp and has a lot of the ball, do they? And certainly doesn't go to the Nou Camp and put three goals past Barcelona, or four, as they'd have to get if... Yeah. I just can't see it happening. So I do hope they're still in the tie at the end of tonight.
So one change I would make to that starting 11, I'd bring Diop back in for Ogbonna. I think Ogbonna's been absolutely superb in recent months, since Balbuena's been out.
Do you think superb's a bit strong?
I think he's had fantastic. He's played really, really well. Okay, he's not been, you know, he's not been consistently good, but, you know, I think that in the grand scheme of things, okay, we haven't kept many clean sheets, but that's just, we never do, ever.
But he's a defender, so isn't that kind of what you're judging?
But no, but I mean, just his overall performances, I think, have been very, very good. I mean, don't forget, he's not the only defender on the pitch. And I think, you know, particularly at home, I think sometimes he's been a bit of a rock. But I think I rate the whole Balbuena Diop partnership. I think that's, defensively we broke down when Balbuena picked up that injury, and I think Ogbonna's done well to deputise. But I think now, with Diop rested for a game, time to come back in, let's get that back four settled again. And I think with that, you know, we've got the pace then with Diop to then deal with the likes of Martial, deal with the likes of Rashford. At Old Trafford, I think that's the change I'd make.
Interesting. And it's that time of the show where I have to put you two on the spot and ask for your score predictions. What are you going for?
2-1 to United, unfortunately.
Okay.
I'd like to think we'd do a bit better, but I can't see us getting anything, to be honest. Oh, it's
doom and gloomy, you, isn't it? Always doom and gloom. I'm going to go 2-1 West Ham. Yeah, Declan Rice winner.
Declan Rice winner, putting himself in the shop window.
That would double his price tag for the summer for United, wouldn't it?
Such a cynic. Doom and gloom on one side, cynicism on the other. You'll have to join us next week on the West Ham Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.